Connor, I want you to know that I appreciate everything you have done to support this show, and I don't set out to make episodes of this to personally torture you. That sure. said, the first episode of season two is about the Maryland Terrapins, and that requires me to ask, where were you on April 1st, 2002?
April 1st, 2002, which I have tried to memory hole, and I've been unsuccessful, and I think about this day a lot. I was 7 years old. Mm-hmm. I was turning eight later that year. And my beloved Indiana Hoosiers men's basketball team, off of an improbable tournament run where they defeated the Duke Blue Devils and Jay Williams and Carlos Boozer on their way to the national title game to lose ultimately to Juan Dixon and the Maryland Terrapins, which has caused... That was the first time I heard of the state of Maryland being 7 years old. It was this distant land to me. I had seen this weird flag, and it caused irrational hate in my heart as a little 7 year old. That has cooled off significantly, funny enough, as they become conference rivals, or maybe because I work in collegiate sports and I should show love to everybody. Yeah. So they buy more stuff from my website, homefieldapparel.com, shop the Maryland Terrapins collection. But that day will forever be burned. It was my first big sports pain in my conscious memory. AJ Moye for Indiana that year was a folk hero, and he had worn newspaper clippings in his shoes, like of naysayers doubting Indiana all that tournament. And so when I was a kid playing basketball that year, I would cut out IU newspaper clippings and put them in my shoes to go to like some basketball camps, and the most Indiana thing you've ever heard. So and the Maryland Terrapins caused me my first real sports pain, which was subsequently followed up by the 03 Chicago Cubs. So it was a really good start.
I mean, that's special though, in a way. Like that's, listen, love and hate are not that far apart.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think about them all the time.
I think you will find on this episode that life has not been all milk and honey for Maryland athletics fans. Since that national championship, it's been complicated in a lot of ways. And there is some degree of chasing what that moment was, in some regards. They have, you know, they've won a national title in women's basketball since then. They've had success in a number of other sports as well. But it's, I think my biggest takeaway was it's a strange existence being a Maryland fan.
Yeah, their success is spread across the board, funny enough, for, you know, they're not talked about as, you know, one of these biggest 10 collegiate sports brands, but yes. You have men's basketball that was really consistent for a long time, before that national title.
Right.
Women's basketball, you could argue, just as consistent, culminating in the 06 title. Lacrosse is huge sport there, obviously.
We get into lax, don't worry.
And then these like random spikes of football too, throughout their history, right? Which I know one of our Maryland friends on this episode has documented quite well. And so, yeah, it's funny because you think of them originally, I think you think of men's basketball, as their prominent brand, but it's kind of all over the place. And they're situated in even within the recruiting, within the DMV. Like it's just it is a program that I, as a school, didn't have much familiarity with, even when they were back in the ACC and they, you know, hurt my 7 year old heart. But as they have joined my beautiful conference, my big, beautiful conference, the Big Ten, I've always been interested in them from afar just because of that. You know, the success is spread across so many sports, but it's, you don't think of them as this really multifaceted brand necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
In the public eye, at least.
I mean, we get into it a little in the show, but I think because the Big Ten move coincided with this like pretty big dip in both men's basketball and football, it kind of like took a lot of the shine off whatever momentum they had at that point. They already had problems with football. You know, we were figuring out that aggressively at that point. But, you know, I'm going to leave a lot of meat on the bone so people can listen to the episode. But I do want to bring up that we're doing something new this season on this show. Connor and his team have very generously let me pick one item from the relevant teams collection for each episode. And we are going to apply a little bit of a listener bonus to it. If you use the code like this, you can get 20% off all of the items that we pick out over the course of this season. We're starting with Maryland. So we are starting with, I'm going to get the name exactly right so people can go find it if they so choose. This is the 1980s Maryland vintage logo tee. Podcast, infamously a visual medium.
Of course.
This is the logo that looks most like a computer game developer that makes like pretty good educational games. That's what this looks like. Like if you're like, I would be interested in wearing a Maryland thing, but I need it to not have a terp on it. I need it to not have any sport referenced on it. I just want people to be like, did you work for a software developer? Yes, that was acquired by Microsoft in 1993. This is the shirt for you. This is absolutely the shirt that you're going to want. So use offer code like this, LIKETHIS, all one word. And you can get 20% off that just because we love you, listener, and we want you to have a great time. And we'll have more selections to pull from as the season continues. But you're not here to listen to me. You're here to listen to our three guests talk about what it's like to root for the Terps.
I am Alex Kirshner. I went to the University of Maryland where I learned a lot of school, but most importantly, I learned a lot about life and I learned a lot about myself and I made lifelong friends. You know, some call it the best 4 years of your life, really. And I would say that they were good. I mean, they were among the four best years of my life were spent at the University of Maryland. Now I co-host the college football podcast Split Zone Duo with my friends Richard Johnson and Stephen Godfrey. And I do all kinds of business and fun stuff with my dear friends Ryan Nanny and Home Field Apparel.
Hey, Ryan. It's me, Matt. I want to talk. I'm doing the introduction that was asked. I am a University of Maryland grad, and I went to the journalism school, which was a sick time to do that. And I am somehow attached to this program ever since, somehow, some way.
Hi, my name is Kofi Yeboah. I went to the University of Maryland, class of 2017, and I studied broadcast journalism. Shout out to the Philip Merrill Journalism School.
That means you were there when Maryland started making the move to the Big Ten, if I'm remembering correctly.
My first year in college was our last year in the ACC, and I remember that year being very weird because some sports were going. I think at the time, I think it was Maryland, like tennis was going. Certain sports were going. That was when Cole Field, like around the time I was there, Cole Fieldhouse was getting gutted and became what like the Maryland football practice field is today. And I remember a lot of students not liking that move at all because it's not like Maryland football at the time was very good. It was like the, I think this was the Edsel years and everyone was like, yeah, we're a basketball school. Why do we keep trying to make ourselves into what we're not? And that move to the Big Ten, I think also made it very hard because I don't know if Maryland's still trying to find a rival, but to me, going from like I grew up a Duke fan, like my dad went to Duke, I lived in North Carolina, my dad went to Duke. As soon as I get to Maryland, I'd say that my dad went to Duke, I grew up a Duke fan. Maryland's like, yo, we do not like Duke fans at all, right? And this is new coming from like me because Duke usually worries about North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest. And seeing Maryland go for like, we absolutely despise Duke whatsoever, to witnessing on campus Maryland's last basketball game against Coach K and barely losing that game, right? And seeing that to next year, playing Michigan, Michigan State, Rutgers, and all of these programs and not really feeling some sign of attachment to it.
Right.
And I know that Maryland tries to, like, we amp ourselves up for, like, Penn State. We amp ourselves up for all of these. But I'm pretty sure that Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State probably have, like, other rivals to that they focus on first. So we find ourselves in that no man's land sometimes. Yeah. And I think that part really gets to me as a fan, because, like, not having that top tier, like, rival that you wait all year for, in my opinion, it feels kind of just, it feels like there's something missing, honestly. And that's where I'm like, the transition from ACC to the Big Ten, that's where I, like, came in, just was like, I don't know what to do.
I mean, considering they're not even going to be one of the most, like, four recent schools at this point, what are we up to? Like, I don't know. That feels like they've been there for fucking ever at this point. It's weird also because I didn't have – so most people I feel like who went to Maryland were either from Maryland or they had parents or relatives that went to Maryland. So they had, like, a history for the Duke rivalries and the Virginia rivalries. I didn't have that, so I think it was much easier for me as the first person in my family to go to even a big state school at all, like, to just grasp Maryland and not even care so much about the ACC Big Ten. Like, I kind of was one of those people who came onto campus and had to inherit, like, fuck Duke. I didn't really know what that meant. Like, that didn't mean anything to me. I was like, I mean, I do hate Duke, but, like, I don't get, I just wasn't there for it. So I didn't have that strong of an attachment. But, like, now we're adding fucking California schools in there, and who cares? Like, you know, at this point, it's a wash. Maryland feels like a mainstay.
Does Maryland have anything close to a, like, real and meaningful rival in the Big Ten, or is there any potential for one to develop at this point?
No, and no. We had something to that effect in the ACC. Like, Maryland and Duke had a legitimately vicious rivalry in basketball, and it didn't get – I don't think it won a lot of headspace for Duke fans because they had North Carolina, and nobody will ever pretend that Maryland-Duke was the same as North Carolina and Duke. But Maryland absolutely was a thorn in Duke's side for a long time. Coach K hates Maryland, despises, like, really disdains the University of Maryland. I believe that in my bones. But it wasn't – you know, it just wasn't perfectly reciprocal because everyone knew that Duke had – another school that they hated more. And, you know, maybe even NC State was on a similar level or higher than Maryland in their rivalry pecking order, to say nothing of, you know, a Kentucky or a Kansas or, like, a team that they might see as a blue blood and see every now and again or play in a big game. Mm-hmm. We just weren't that for them. And then in football, the closest thing to a historical rival would be UVA. Mm-hmm. But, like, can you really build a great rivalry with the bricks being UVA and Maryland football? Is that a strong foundation? Like, is that going to hold?
I mean, in theory you can, but it's going to be a very niche rivalry, let's say.
And it was then broken up, such as it was, by Maryland going to the Big Ten. And one of my dearest friends is a UVA alumna, and Maryland and UVA played last year, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll text her and banter a bit about the rivalry game tonight. And then I was like, wait, I'm not going to do that. Like, what are we going to talk about? Like, you know, like, I respect her too much to waste her time by talking to her about UVA and Maryland's rivalry in football. So, no, we don't have a rival.
Is there anybody, maybe they're not a rival, is there any team that Maryland fans have decided, it's not a rivalry, but God, they're super annoying. We're just, like, really annoyed by this team and this fan base.
Michigan State, 100%.
Oh, okay.
I mean, talk about a bunch of people with a grievance complex. And, I mean, like, Maryland and Michigan State have played some pretty good basketball games against each other since Maryland's been in the Big Ten. And absolutely. I mean, every time you have to watch Tom Izzo scrunch his face up like the absolute tightest he possibly can and grab a basketball player by the shoulder in a way that's, like, kind of aggressive and uncomfortable and then scream at him, like, you think to yourself, wow, like, that's a guy that we have to beat his ass. Occasionally Maryland does, occasionally not. Also, I think Maryland fans have a significant desire to beat Iowa in men's basketball, which rarely happens, but did happen this year.
From where does that come?
I don't know. Probably because we lose to them every time the men's basketball team goes to Iowa City. And Fran McCaffrey is a yeller, and it's just kind of like nice to beat guys who get really mad when you beat them. So Iowa's been the apple of our eye lately, I would say.
That's my thing, is that I feel like that's something I can't answer. I'm not there anymore, right? And I feel like we have these days, again, where I remember my freshman or sophomore year, we had like a blackout game for Michigan State. We got so excited to show up, and like it was a home game. We student section. I think we lost by like 40, right? So it would help if like these certain teams are like more competitive, like at our school. But I feel like Maryland Rutgers, because I think we joined at the same time.
Yep.
I think that that's when we were just like, okay, maybe Maryland Rutgers will turn into like something super, but we couldn't afford to like just look at a Michigan, look at a Michigan State, look at like a Minnesota, you know, and be like, okay, you're our rival now. Cause like we are just like the new kids on the block. It's like, I don't know.
It's so hard because proximity matters. Mm-hmm. Like, it just definitely matters that I inherited not only the Maryland-Duke rivalry, but a Maryland-Virginia rivalry in across all sports. And I don't even know if the teams ever really hated each other, but the people, the fans actually cared about that rivalry. Mm-hmm. And I think that also happened because Virginia and Maryland basketball programs both had expectations. When you look at proximity for Maryland right now, I will not entertain a Rutgers rivalry. It's just not happening. And in Penn State, like, the sports are reversed. They're going to dominate us in football, and we're going to dominate them in basketball. So trying to make a rivalry there doesn't make sense either. And, like, I don't have enough time to argue with somebody from California. Like, I have to go to bed. So I don't understand how that's going to happen. So it's tough. I mean, I feel like a true event has to happen rather than – like just fans being around each other. Cause like, I don't know, we're not really traveling to the Midwest takes a lot of effort and the team has to be good to, you know, require that effort. So unless suddenly a team gets awesome or there's a actually like real big fight of some sort, like that we see on the court or between coaches, between players, whatever it is, it's hard to just naturally have that type of rivalry because you have to put people in a situation to hate each other.
Conference realignment, I think, is something that for fans of like legacy programs in a conference generates a lot of big feelings. Mm-hmm. But for Maryland, you know, it's not that, it's not like the Big Ten history is that old and storied at this point. How do they feel? How do Maryland fans feel about like, yep, we're in a conference with Washington and UCLA now? Like, how does that strike everyone?
It's so funny. Like, I feel like Maryland also entering with Rutgers was a weird time because it's like, well, at least we're not that guy. Like, I think everybody accepted us a little easier than they did Rutgers. But at the beginning, it was so – everyone was trying to, like, force a Penn State football rivalry that, like, never made sense. Like, if we're going to pick on someone we can actually, like, fight. So, like, that wasn't helpful. I mean, I think it feels weird, but at this point, every conference is so, like, fucked that I think right now it doesn't feel as weird. I know that people felt way stronger. Like, again, I said I didn't have the attachment. I know plenty of people who felt – like pretty crappy about leaving the ACC and especially leaving like a true basketball hotbed. Cause again, that's Maryland men's and women's basketball are really like, those are the staple programs around that school. Like everybody expects those two programs to not just make the tournament, like make waves in the tournament every year. So I think losing that level of competition, and I think there was a fear of like how this would affect recruiting. And again, as we talked about, it still hasn't recovered. So at least on the men's side. So, yeah, it's like it felt weirder then than it does now.
I think it's going to be really weird waking up at like potentially 10 in the morning. I'm on the West Coast right now. I think it's
so this
really
is great
weird
for you.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really weird waking up if the games are still at like the same like East Coast times and stuff like that, it's gonna be weird waking up at 9 o'clock in the morning watching USC Maryland,
right?
And expecting to feel the same emotional value as a Maryland versus Virginia or Maryland versus North Carolina, Maryland versus Duke. I just, again, it's going to take some getting used to. And I feel like that goes to say for like all realignment, but for a school that already joined a conference, to have schools from coming from a conference and like being thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
Right. That's just like a lot to process. I feel it's a lot to process because, it's just so it's just so different. Just being like, oh yeah, this is USC. They used to play Texas all the time, and they used to beef with Stanford, UCLA, and then they're just really like Maryland. like we're trying to conjure stuff out of thin air.
I think the general tenor is that we got a ticket to the chocolate factory, and Maryland is inside the plexiglass that separates the haves and the have-nots. But I do think there's a reasonable worry from a more discerning Maryland fan about how long that will continue. We are not one of the Big Ten's biggest brands by any stretch of the imagination. And all of the success in lacrosse and soccer and field hockey is not going to be the thing that keeps Maryland in whatever the next iteration of the big leagues is in college sports. And so I do think there's reason to, and there are people who do worry about what will happen when Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State and who knows, maybe even Oregon and USC get it into their heads that maybe they should not be making and sharing equal amounts of money with schools like Maryland and perhaps like Rutgers or like Purdue. And, you know, will we be on the inside of that have-not delineation forever? And I don't know the answer to that, but I don't feel entirely secure for the long term either.
You know, I think I sort of learned prepping for this episode is that Maryland has all these traditionally less visible sports where they have these big track records of success. You mentioned field hockey, men's soccer is one. And so does that impact the expectations people and fans have for men's basketball and football? Is it sort of like we're good, like we can be a school of championships and a school of accomplishment? Does that get put onto football and basketball, or are those viewed through a different lens?
I think I view it in a different lens because I saw so much construction when I was just walking around campus. Like, again, seeing Cole Fieldhouse get gutted for this state-of-the-art practice football field. We already have a practice football field, by the way. Seeing this indoor practice football field. And then just to go, like, 7-5 or 8-4, and I'm just like, okay, but we have all of these other programs that I wish we could like celebrate. And I know that it's like the money, the revenue, the all trying to get all these sponsorships. I know it's beyond just that. But you then look at Maryland basketball. I think Maryland basketball is more of like a historically, like this is a national, they won the national championship in 2002, you know? This like historically that program is good. Like historically that program has had its like players walk through in terms of like Lynn Bias, in terms of Juan Dixon, Steve Blake, and seeing Maryland, a program that's historically good, be so underachieving for years. That was the frustrating part. And I think that part was where Maryland was like, yeah, we're a soccer school now. You know, we're saying like certain things like that, being like, yeah, we're a lacrosse school because we're a soccer school, because like over all of that, like, man, people still go to the basketball games, pack the basketball games, even like some way out in the cold for a chance to get the tickets, because this also might have changed since I've been there. But those tickets are not assigned seats. Like that is like you are rushing to the student section, and then there's a student section there called the crew. that I think started at soccer and then like went to other sports, and they're like always running and stuff like that. So the enthusiasm for all of these like sports in terms of like going to games and being an event is still like high, but also being like, hey man, this is a lot of money's being put into this team and we're not seeing like the correlation in terms of just me being there. But like, I know that, Maryland football, it's a longer thing. It's a longer process. We're in the Big Ten. It's not like one year we're immediately just magically going to dethrone Michigan and Michigan State right. and be in the Big Ten championship. Like we kind of know that. So that's where we're at. But like every other sport, it's like, yeah, fine.
It's like, okay, you know football way better than I do, but the idea of Maryland football ever being a powerhouse just doesn't exist. Like even when I graduated in 2016. So even at that time period, like no one was like, Maryland football is going to become the next big whatever. Like, again, painting some more context here. I was so far into New York that when I went to Maryland, I was like, wow, the football stadium is huge. Like, this is cool. Like, I didn't even realize that, like, this isn't shit. And when you go anywhere else in the South, it's like, actually, this sucks. But I'm glad that when I went there, I thought it was cool, at least.
Right.
I just hadn't seen the world yet. But I think anybody that's trying to convince themselves that Maryland football is ever going to be a powerhouse is silly. I have been of the mindset of, why don't we just put this money in programs that have a chance? That's just how I've always been. If we put half of that money that goes into football into women's basketball, we would be a perennial number 1-5 team in the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Men's basketball actually has expectations, though. We actually have always cared about that and been pretty good. I think if you've won a tournament in the last 20 or so years, that means you're a pretty relevant program. And all throughout my time at Maryland, the team was tournament good. Mm-hmm. And even in the years after I graduated Maryland, the team was tournament good. Maryland specifically had its own issues keeping a mediocre coach for probably too long in Mark Turgeon. And he was good enough to get the team to a certain point, and it was hardly ever going to get better than that. He was a great defensive coach, couldn't figure out how to put together an offense, was a consistently pretty good recruiter, which is why he was able to stay for as long as he did. But eventually you get tired of that because it's Maryland basketball. Like, there's some pride in that team and that sport. You know, you don't want to settle for just being a round of 32 Sweet 16 team. There was disappointment in the Kevin Willard hire. I think 2 years ago, he then surprised us by putting together a pretty good first year. And now it's like any goodwill he had a couple months ago is out the window now. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the program is in a weird place. I think there hasn't been, you know, if I'm a recruit, I'm not excited about going to Maryland basketball right now. And that's a place that was able to get a top, I forget what Diamond Stone was. I think he was a top 10 recruit or so when I was in school 7 or 8 years ago. So, no, I don't think they've handled the Big Ten well. And, you know, it's just going to get more challenging as time goes on.
I think that for football, all we want is a trip to Pasadena every 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
Which now we're going to get because UCLA is in the conference. So we're going to get to go and play in the Rose Bowl every now and again. 9 wins would be nice at some point. I think everyone would love 9 wins, but I actually think this, I think that the biggest thing that the Maryland football fan wants is one freaking win against one of the big boys in the Big Ten at a time when that team is good. Maryland did get Penn State twice, got them in the COVID year in Happy Valley when things were weird and when Penn State wasn't very good, got them in 2014, Maryland's first year in the Big Ten, when Penn State was still under sanction and had a lot of problems. So like they've won a few of these games over the years. They got Michigan under Brady Hoke right before Harbaugh came in, but Maryland has never beaten a Big Ten heavyweight when they've been a heavyweight. And they don't have a signature win since I've been a Maryland fan, and I got to school in 2012, near the beginning of the Randy Edsall era. He had come in 2011. So that's the thing that Maryland football fans want more than anything else.
And that has happened while they have been, I know this isn't going to be the case going forward, but they've been trapped in a division with really the three heavyweights of the conference the whole time.
Yeah, the two heavyweights in Penn State. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've kind of just gotten wet-willied repeatedly in those games. And it's tough because Maryland has actually come pretty close a few times, including against Ohio State multiple times, against Michigan just this past season. They were winning at halftime. They were winning in the third quarter against Ohio State this year. So they've had looks, and it's just always fallen apart. The P&O always falls on the head in some form or fashion, and they haven't been able to get over the hump. And I think for Maryland basketball fans, getting out of the Sweet 16 would be good. Like, I think that we think collectively of Maryland as a top 25 men's basketball job and a top 10 or 12 women's basketball job. The women's team has made Final Four, Elite Eight trips with some regularity. Also, early on in Brenda Freeze's era, has a national championship to its name, just as the men's team had one under Gary Williams. But I think that breakthroughs in March above what the recent ceiling has been is the name of the game for Maryland basketball, because it has been a lot of years of disappointments at slightly later levels of the tournament for the women and at fairly early levels of the tournament for the men.
Was there an expectation when Maryland made the jump to the Big Ten that, okay, part of what's going to be good about this move is we can now become a dominant basketball force in this conference on both the men's and the women's sides, because we're just leaving something has been stronger than what we're going to.
Yeah, I think so. Like, the Wedding Crashers thing, like crab cakes and football, that's what Maryland does. It's not true. Nobody believes that. I think that we fancy ourselves basketball people and define most of the great memories of the athletic department through the lens of basketball. So yeah, I think that you go to a conference and look around and see Michigan State and Indiana, and I don't know, am I going to include Purdue in this? No, they're absolutely juiceless. but you look around and you see, you know, mostly football schools and a couple of schools that dabble in basketball, that like the shooty hoop a little bit. In the case of Indiana and Michigan State, have obviously achieved great things in that sport. And you think we're going to be one of the best few basketball programs in that conference. And honestly, that hasn't really, that's been somewhat true. I mean, Maryland has been.
On the women's side, they have dominated the conference side of things.
Yes. Maryland has won the Big Ten a bunch in the women's game, has won it once in the men's game, and been a pretty frequent, you know, buy or double buy recipient in the conference tournament in men's basketball. So, you know, to some extent, I think it's happened. But it is annoying when schools that are clearly not at all basketball schools achieve greater heights than Maryland basketball in the Big Ten. And that has happened as well. Like, Michigan, for example, has gone places that Maryland has not gone in the time that Maryland has been in the Big Ten. And, you know, that's tough. That's not what we're looking for. I guess on the bright side, we haven't lost as a number one seed to a 16 like Purdue has, for instance. but I think we would like to see a little bit more.
I think the program that has done the best in that transition, at least arguably, is the women's basketball team. We've already sort of mentioned that they have, like, comfortably contended well with Big Ten competition. And, you know, a lot of that success in the last decade lines up with the overall growth of the popularity of the women's game. And I'm curious if you have a sense of how Maryland is benefiting or perhaps not benefiting from being part of that growing moment. Like, it seems like with what Brenda Freeze has accomplished and with some of the, you know, accomplished players that Maryland has put into the WNBA, are they part of this rising tide, or are they getting left behind in some way? What's your sort of sense of it?
Maryland has not, with the exception of like a UConn game here or there, a couple of, I think last season or the year before, Maryland has not joined the ranks of the schools that are packing them in for women's games. Like, it's not like a Caitlin Clark in Iowa City type of scene, right, week in and week out when they're playing these games. But I think a lot of that is just because Maryland is in a suburb of Washington, D.C. It's a pro sports market through and through. Maryland has a very hard time selling out men's basketball games. Maryland did not sell out to play number one Purdue a couple of weeks ago. And granted, that's Purdue. Like, does anyone really take them seriously as like the number one team in the country just because they're ranked there? No. But I think that at the same time, it does speak to just the difficulty of catching lightning in a bottle when you are in a pro market and you're a college program, a university in general. So I don't think that Maryland is ever going to be like the scene, like the greatest endorsement in the world for enthusiasm about any college sport, including women's college basketball. But I do think that people care. If you can measure these things by how much the group chats light up when Maryland's on a Final Four run last year and going to play against Dawn Staley in South Carolina, absolutely that was happening. People were furious, conspiratorial with the officiating in that game, feeling like it was an effort to push the Gamecocks over the top back to the national championship. So, like, that's real. And I think this team, this program does have a significant following. I think just about everybody has boundless respect for what Brenda Fries has built there. And it just hasn't quite materialized in the same way that it does in different markets. That Elite Eight game last year against South Carolina was really cool. And like every serious Maryland sports fan that I know watched that game and was as invested in it as they are in any men's tournament game that they've had since I've been there.
I think one, like the Maryland women's program has been so strong for so long. Mm-hmm. And most of that is because Brenda Fries has been the consistent head coach for two decades. So it's much easier to recruit when you can point to like, hey, you get to play under a legendary coach who's already won a championship. Maryland, the state, really cares about basketball in general. I think that's one thing, because more context, I'm from New York, Long Island. So we don't have any college that anyone cares about. Like, college sports, just not really that much of a thing. I always like, I hear people like, oh, you don't root for Syracuse? It's like, that's a different fucking state. That's not even New York. So, Maryland was cool for me because Maryland was the only big state school the state has. So like everybody supports one program and everyone really rallied behind women's basketball, which I think rules. So the long answer is the program is still finding success somehow. We're still pulling, like next year they have two top 50 recruits coming in. The extra sting recently that I don't think has anything to do with the Big Ten, but a strong recruiting class broke up. Ashley Owusu transferred, and then Angel Reese, the real dagger of a transfer. So to have someone like leave the program and then immediately win a title for someone else, that's something that doesn't feel very Maryland women's basketball. But I mean, listen, Diamond Miller was the number two pick in the WNBA draft last year. So like talent is still coming through Maryland. It's just right now it's a down year and it feels doubly as bad because Angel Reese left.
I think they are. I mean, we just recently saw, I think Maryland sold out when Maryland Iowa played. There was a Caitlin Clark sellout game. Maryland fans will show up to like other, I don't know how other colleges work where it's like this sport. Maryland fans will show up to lacrosse. Maryland fans will show up to soccer. Maryland fans will show up to like every other like sport. Because for the good thing for I know that at some places, at some colleges, you have to pay for the football games. Yep. Maryland has like some kind of like lottery system for like certain big games. But I had never, like in my 4 years, I had never been declined a ticket. Like I'd never been like shut out of a lottery. But all the games are free with your student ID. This might have changed since 2017. But when I was there, and people show up. Like I remember showing up to like these soccer games, and we had a thing called like soccer scarf night. And that is like, those games were more packed than the football games at that time, right? And because I think we had Zach Steffen, like the gold contender. He's on the US team now, and we would cheer. And those environments were way rowdier than like the Maryland football, where we're synonymously known for like leaving at halftime because the tailgates are too much fun, right? But yeah, I think that women's basketball and Maryland being good at women's basketball historically, like over the last like year, the last like decade plus, right? And you know, Angel Reese transferred from Maryland, I think, and having like that type of talent like come into Maryland. And I think that even though it's been like a down year, like historically, it's been like Maryland women. Like we were like, yes, the Maryland men's team under Mark Turgeon is mid, but the women's team is great, you right. know? So it's been like that ever since, you know, for a long time being like, yeah this men's team isn't gonna, but the women's team is fire. We're going to go support. That's, I think that's how the Maryland fan base is very like, hey, we are seeing a lot of construction. We're seeing a lot of construction and demolition for a 4-8 football team. This, I don't like this. Let's go support Brenda Freeze and co over there. And I think the fans and the students really show up for that 100%.
One of the other sports I should say that you mentioned in that is lacrosse. And I didn't grow up in any kind of lacrosse culture, but both the men's and the women's teams at Maryland are very successful and have been for a very, very long time. And I want to, can you explain to me like what lacrosse culture on campus at Maryland is like? Like, are there pockets of lax bros and lax folks just wandering around? Like, how does it work?
If you think that like lacrosse is good at Maryland, just like see like even our club lacrosse teams can probably like give people buckets, right? I think that the Maryland area in terms of just like liking lacrosse, it's a really lacrosse hotbed in terms of even around here. You got like Maryland, then like John Hopkins, I think, is good at lacrosse. And I think that's just what like the culture is. And it's really cool to see a team like that. I think we won the national championship like 2 years ago in lacrosse. And we have like historically good programs, and it's been cool. And also another cool thing about, I think, Maryland is that every stadium is on campus. Like you don't have to travel to see like the lacrosse team. You don't have to travel to see like the football team. Whereas Georgetown plays basketball in Capital One Arena, and right. that's nowhere. Like, they got to travel for that. Mm-hmm. I have to think that if every, because the baseball field's on campus, like everything is on the campus. And right. a lot of people, whenever they visited Maryland and visited me from like other colleges, they'd be like, I didn't know your campus was this big. I'm like, I didn't know we had a big campus. It never felt really like walking across campus was like a 20-30 minute walk, but people were like, yeah, your campus is huge. I'm like, yeah, we have a bunch of gyms. We have a bunch of just like all of that. But lacrosse field hockey has their own projects. I'm sorry, their own stadiums on campus. They have their own fields. And no, lacrosse plays in the football field. They play in Maryland Football Stadium or whatever we named it, because we had to rename it. We had to rename it for historical reasons. But being able to see Terps fans and Terps, like the college like fan base, go hard for like whenever they might not be following, but if the Terps are in something, they're gonna watch that game 1,000%. Like, it's such a fun culture, I feel like.
Remember where I said I was from, Long Island?
Mm-hmm.
So was half of the school. So that's like, I mean, that's like, here's what I will say. I think the stigma around lacrosse, like lax bros in New York, is different than it is in Maryland. And I can't really fully describe that without like probably saying mean things. But I think it was actually cool in Maryland, in the state of Maryland. And maybe it's just because I also grew up in New York and was sour about the state in general. But I was like, I don't know, like lax girls were an energy that didn't fit my aura, is what I would say.
Sure.
So I just like wasn't into it. It just like wasn't for me. I knew I didn't want to play it. I like it just wasn't, I don't know. I felt very different from basketball, which is like my thing. But you're right. It was actually cool, and it still is successful in Maryland.
So is it popular beyond the segment of people who like grew up playing? Like, I guess what strikes me is, you know, true of football and basketball, is these are sports that attract fans who didn't necessarily grow up playing these games. Like, oftentimes you did, but it's not it's not surprising if you meet somebody who's a huge basketball fan who's like, yeah, I haven't played that much. For lacrosse, does it extend that far, or is it like, this is like the fan base are people who wanted to be this good but just weren't?
Like, now that I'm like trying to think back, I'm sure I went to a lacrosse game at some point. Mm-hmm. It does not even stick out. I remember going to soccer games and those being way more popular from like a student on campus perspective than attending a lacrosse game was. I don't know if I ever like thought deeply on what the reasons for that was. The soccer teams were also good, so that also helped. Again, the through line here is if your team is like ranked, chances are people are going to go watch them. If Maryland lacrosse wasn't good, I don't see people still feeling a passion for it, if that makes more sense. Whereas there's still somehow passion for this shitty Maryland men's basketball team.
I would say it moves the needle a little bit, because being a Maryland basketball fan or Maryland football fan, which are the two big sports that are going to get the most attention, you kind of have an ingrained inferiority complex. This is born out of playing in the ACC with Duke and North Carolina for all those years, the All-Carolina Conference, as Maryland fans would call it, and just never having, you know, a real football rival or real football success for any extended period of time. So you look for other sports where you can claim dominance over other people. And both the men's and the women's lacrosse programs at Maryland have given us something to crow about regularly all the time. So it's great.
And how much does that overlap with, like, I guess, for lack of a better word, the lax bro culture on campus? Like, this is one of those things where, you know, I think football and basketball fans come from a variety of different places, and it's full of people who didn't necessarily play the sport at any meaningful competitive level. Lacrosse, again, as someone who's just sort of guessing as an outsider, feels like it's much more built around people who were really into lacrosse playing growing up. Is there like a big contingent of former lax people on the Maryland campus?
There are a few, but I think that the real lifeblood of a lacrosse fan base is fraternity boys who never played lacrosse, but are from like rich suburbs where lacrosse was played. Mm-hmm. So they've had some proximity to it, and it's a way to express their tastefulness about sports. And so, you know, they'll watch a lacrosse game on Saturday and then put on the Patriots on Sunday. And it usually is the Patriots. And that's what they'll do.
Why is it usually the Patriots?
I just think that New Englanders love lacrosse, and they love to... not only do they love lacrosse, but they want you to know that they are lacrosse adjacent. I know at least seven guys like this from Maryland, all of them from not Boston, but they claim Boston. Like, you know, you're from Cohasset, Massachusetts, or Mansfield, Massachusetts, or whatnot. And you just want to rub other people's faces in the fact that you were proximate to lacrosse.
Where does Maryland sit overall in a college athletics landscape that is very much changing all the time? Like, what is your sense of their place in this weird world?
I think it's very unique. I think it's very unique because Maryland is a school that has multiple sports that they are very historically good at and like powerhouses year in and year out. Now, are those sports like the big money makers? Are those sports kept in mind when the TV deals are being brought up and stuff like that? Who's to say? But I think that it gives us a unique perspective of being like, yes, we moved to the Big Ten Conference, and the men's college basketball and football, like, we're good at every other sport, like mostly every other sport. So the Big Ten move was still about money, but I don't know how much, like, And also the fact that we're like the Under Armour school, I think affects it as well. You know, where we just can't stop putting the flag on uniforms, you know? So I think that gives us some kind of identity. But like, it's so funny that there's like a new uniform combination every year. And it's like, oh my God, the flag again. But like, that's who we are. So like, that's sure. not, so I'm not like, it's a great flag. Like, you know,
it's distinctive. That's it's distinctive. For sure. You're never unsure what you're looking at.
You never. Yeah, exactly. You know what it is about. So I'm not like, yeah, I understand why that's what makes Maryland, Maryland. So I understand like why that is, but I think that Maryland's unique in the fact that it's like a very popular school. It's like known, like people know the flag. It's very, you can spot it from a mile away. But as a school that has a lot of sports and is currently like not like a powerhouse in men's basketball or football, I feel like, I don't know, it takes a step back. It takes a seat back, you know? That's what I think.
I do care. I'm a cynical Maryland sports fan. I think cynicism comes with being in Washington, D.C. You know, it comes comes with like just being a bunch of city slickers who are in a sports market where the sports teams have lost a lot of games over the years. And you know, I think that all of the Baltimore Orioles fans who are also Maryland fans and the Washington Wizards fans who are also Maryland fans kind of explain why that is. But
do you think they like bring that sort of like energy with them to Maryland sports in a weird way?
I do. There's some boisterousness that comes with it too. Like, you know, the national anthem at Maryland games, it's like, oh, say, can you say it's, oh, like the Baltimore Orioles do that at Camden Yards. So like you get some of that kind of old school rowdiness that comes from the pro sports sensibilities of the fans. But a nice thing about Maryland's athletic department is that because everyone, not everyone, but many people just watch football and men's basketball no matter what, because it's kind of like what the mainstream brain is trained to do with college sports. Mm-hmm. You get that during the fall and the winter. But like in the spring and, you know, for basically the entirety of the college sports calendar, except the dead of summer where nobody's playing at all, there is going to be a competitive Maryland team in some sport doing something, whether that's lacrosse, whether that's field hockey, whether that's soccer, and whether that's even been baseball in a couple of seasons. They have not quite made it to Omaha, but they've had competitive runs and been in the College World Series. The nature of Maryland having a pretty broad-based athletic department is that you're watching something, like something is on your mind all throughout the year, and you got something to cheer for, and that's about as decent as you can ask for, I think, to have your attention on the teams that you care about for that much time.
Relevant without being radical. They're like, don't stand out in any certain way, but the size of the school, the size of the fan base will always put them in conversations for things. Mm-hmm. I feel like I am constantly waiting for the one person who changes the culture of the men's basketball team or the football team. And I think that person comes in men's basketball in the next decade, and I don't have any hope for football. That's just being bluntly honest.
With a lot of schools, I think of like what I'm going to call a cultural tone setter. Like, I am a little biased here, but I think Steve Spurrier is a really useful tone setter for the University of Florida. Beyond just sort of the football team, like, there's a certain brashness, there's a certain, like, dismissiveness towards certain other schools, there's, like, a kind of smirking prickishness that I think kind of Florida fans and Florida students can kind of mimic. It's sort of like, okay, that's sort of what it means to be a Gator, so to speak. Is there somebody like that for Maryland, or has there been somebody like that for Maryland who is sort of the cultural touchstone for fans and students?
Yeah, it's Scott Van Pelt, the Sports Center anchor. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, he didn't even play sports. He's the guy. He's the guy now. He is like the, I don't know how to say this in a way that doesn't sound derisive, but I don't mean it that way. He's like the cultural mascot for Maryland athletics. Like, he is.
Sure. Yeah.
Like the person that the athletic department features at everything. Like, you know, it's not like, you know, the athletic department doesn't run around and go grab Boomer Esiason or Vernon Davis or like pick your mm-hmm. Maryland football player or Sean Merriman and bring mm-hmm. them to every sporting event and say, hey, clap for this guy. Doesn't do that mm-hmm. with Juan Dixon, who was the mm-hmm. basketball point guard on the national championship team, but does do it with Scott Van Pelt, who's in DC a lot, records Sports Center there, you know, 30 minutes from campus, and is like a, what I would say the most famous people in sports media after you and me. He's probably top three, top four,
yeah.
top five.
Yeah. Yeah. It's us two, SVP, yeah. and then Godfrey.
Exactly. And so like he's big. He handed me my diploma at my journalism school graduation wow. in 2016.
Like, I was going to say he's also very like organically into being, this is like, it doesn't feel
he
like
likes it.
They're,
yeah,
they're dragging
he's a
him
fan.
Into this.
No, he's a fan. He will do anything he can to help Maryland. And he is like the athletic department's guy. I don't know that like, mm-hmm. I don't know that the whole thing is organic. Like, I don't know if the whole student body is just like, wow. Like when I think Maryland, I think Scott Van Pelt, mm-hmm. but you know, I don't know that we have one I mean, for a while there was like Kevin Plank, the founder of Under Armour was mm-hmm. And still is to some extent like widely talked about as like, who's like the Maryland alum, like the person who yeah. like represents us when people talk about Maryland, Jim Henson, of the Muppets.
That's not the answer I expected.
He's got a statue on campus. But I think the funny thing is that it's definitely not like an athlete. Like it's not, right. you know, it's not someone who played sports for Maryland and will never have to buy a beer in College Park again and mm-hmm. is this icon that everyone looks up to.
I would just say that one thing that was really cool being at Maryland was the fact that Stephon Diggs was there. Mm-hmm. And I think that even though those Maryland teams were like, they weren't that good, having Stephon Diggs there was like being like, okay, Maryland has such a hotbed. They're in such a hotbed. Like the DMV has so many athletes that just go to other schools.
Right.
And like every other, and like Markel Fultz went to DeMatha and then goes play basketball at Washington. It's like, guys, if it's really, I think we need a couple more athletes in the Maryland area. Yeah, I feel like once Maryland gets that like major like local athlete that like brings everyone. Because I remember that's when do you remember the like Dwayne Haskins was originally supposed to go to Maryland?
Yep.
And then it was supposed to be like the, okay, if Dwayne Haskins comes to Maryland, so many
this
people.
Is, this
would
is
also
what this
come
is what that
Maryland.
Opens yeah. up. Yes, right.
But we were so bad that I'm like, yeah, buddy, go to Ohio State. Like, what are you? Like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, man. Like, don't. Like, I never want to put like pressure on a college kid to like turn a whole program around for decades. Like, right. if it's not worth it, it's not worth it. And at the time, Maryland football was just not worth the hassle, right? So I think, like having Diggs and then signing like every big signing where it's like Diggs, Mello, Tremble for basketball. Mm-hmm. Like that was a good couple of years because you had Mello, Jake Layman, getting Des Wells to transfer from Xavier was like also big because it was just like, yeah, okay, Maryland has shown that we can still get these like good players, but I wish that it could like start a movement. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, yeah. like where, you know, where you watch like the Miami 30 for 30 and you're just right. like, why can't we just get all the DMV?
Right, right. Why can't the 30 best players from this area just decide to be Terps?
Just be like, hey. But I understand that. So I would say probably Diggs.
Like if we're lying to ourselves, we could just say Stephon Diggs. But like everyone knows that was a fluke. That's never going to happen again. That's a really interesting question. I think there's so much nostalgia for the brief championship basketball era we had in both men's and women's hoops that there are like enough callbacks to Steve Blake and Juan Dixon mm-hmm. and Christy Tolliver and Marissa Coleman. Don't know if I would say like anybody like singularly has risen to like that is the automatic person you think of when you think of the University of Maryland sports. Maybe also because there's just been a ton of turnover. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we don't have the one. I mean, the one you could point to is Brenda Fries, just because she's been a mainstay and has just a general demeanor of like, we're going to kick ass and like run through the tournaments. But obviously the football team, what do you want me to do there? And the men's basketball team hasn't had anyone like stay long enough and be dominant enough, at least since I have paid attention to Maryland sports. So I don't have an answer for that. I think, again, there's nostalgia for early 2000s success. So you could probably point to a handful of those figures.
What is the sports relationship between Maryland and DC? Like, can you walk me through that a little bit?
So a cool thing about the University of Maryland is the fact that the Maryland has its own metro stop and you're able to go into the DC area. Now, I know that on college tours and certain things are like, yeah, Maryland's very close to DC and Baltimore. Baltimore is a little bit of an excursion. It's a little tougher to get to, but it's still doable, which is good. And I love Baltimore as a city. Maryland, I think when people talk about like the DC, if you're a DC sports fan, that does not include Maryland all the time, because of course you might like have gone somewhere else. Like you might be a Georgetown fan. You might, you know, that might be where the split is, or you might root for George Washington or George Mason or Howard. Right. I think that there are a lot of other schools in DC to where it's not like, oh yeah, I'm a Nationals, DC United fan. I'm a Wizards fan. I'm also a Maryland fan. I think that that goes more towards family legacy and whatnot. But University of Maryland has a lot of in-state students that go there, and that like, or like my father went here. Like you would go to tailgates, and like your friend's dad would make some of the best like crab dip you've ever had, right? And then you'd miss the first quarter, right? So there was always a culture like that at Maryland where it was like, hey, this place has been around for a long time and we love this place, and we love this place so much that like you're gonna stay in state and like still like go to one of the best colleges in the country. But like the DC thing, like people, students like for DC, like when we played Georgetown, like it wasn't hard to get to travel there.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that Maryland being close to DC, but like also like not being in like the DC sports fandom, if you say that, it's like an add-on being like, hey, but like what do you root for? Georgetown, Maryland, yada yada.
Did you see the Big Ten graphic? They show that we're in DC.
You're right.
It's like, I don't know what the question is. It's like when we go out to play Rutgers and we pass the Statue of Liberty.
That's right. Everybody who came through Ellis Island got a Rutgers t-shirt on the way in. People don't know that.
Yeah, it's a fun fact. You ask very interesting questions just because DC professional sports is going through its own hellscape currently between the basketball and hockey teams, or I shouldn't even say all basketball teams, because the women are going to stay in the Capitol, but proposing the Wizards and the Capitals go to Virginia. And now it's still the fight of like, if the Commanders are coming into DC or not. So like DC has its own weird feelings about that. And I think everybody has a different like polarized decision of what they want to happen. Although I think it's pretty unanimous. Nobody wants the Caps and Wizards to leave the city. That makes no sense and helps nobody except the fucking rich guy. But yeah, I think that's a great question. Also, like this city is super transient and filled with so many people who are coming from the college. So I felt like I have met so many people that just there's such an overlap. But like no one's a Commanders fan. I mean, that just that doesn't exist. Yeah. And again, as a person who's lived in this city for like almost 10 years, it's like trying to get to Landover, Maryland sucks. And the team is bad. So it's like, that's really hard. But also, to get at your question, I think because so many folks here are from this area, there is a level of support for University of Maryland football and basketball, honestly, just because, again, like the DMV has its own weird like cultiness, even when the M and the V fight.
If you had to compare Maryland fans to another fan base as a way of sort of explaining how they are and how they act, who would it be and why?
Penn State fans if football were basketball and basketball were football?
Okay, break that down a little bit for me, please.
The outright nihilism that I see displayed from Maryland football fans, including myself, the existential despair, the extent to which we believe that nothing matters and nothing can ever get better, has only been matched by one fan base that I've noticed on any given sport. And that's when you get Penn State fans talking about men's basketball. I think that Penn State basketball fans and Maryland football fans, it's the same picture, Ryan. It's the same exact picture. And that picture is Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the mountainside.
So then, is the flip true? Is the psyche of a Penn State football fan and a Maryland basketball fan, are those similarly aligned, or are there too many differences there?
Extremely similarly aligned. Both believe that they should be and could be a national championship program, but cannot even get to the top of their own conference and are perpetually destined to be somewhere between the 10th and 30th best program in the sport in any given year.
Which is not a bad place to be.
No, it's fine. And like, you'll have your up years. Like Penn State had the year where they almost made the 14 playoff, like, and won the Big Ten. Maryland had a year where they won the Big Ten in men's basketball as well, before COVID got the NCAA tournament canceled that year. So yeah, man, like, we are them and they are us. Just, they don't want to admit it.
If off the top of my head, it almost kind of feels like Toronto Raptors-y, where they, again, huge fan base. Everyone's really passionate about this team. They briefly had this success window that, like, everyone still lives by and probably, like, will live by forever. But they need this one big break to ever get there again.
Maryland's decision to leave the ACC and join the Big Ten, in retrospect, seems conclusively to have been a smart choice. The Terrapins are in a much more stable position than they otherwise would be. Women's basketball tends to outperform football and men's hoops, but honestly, that was true before the conference move anyways. On a spreadsheet, it all looks very net positive. But the smart choice is also kind of the sad one. Maryland no longer plays its traditional basketball rivals, and that takes away something from the experience. And a football program that used to at least be in the mix for conference championships now really doesn't come close to it. It's not exactly right to blame every Terp woe on the ACC to Big Ten move. Some of the problems are self-inflicted, and some of them seem to be a reflection of how college sports have changed in the last 20-plus years. And that leaves Maryland in this tricky place that I think a lot more athletic departments than you might think of at first are stuck in. It could definitely be worse, but it's not clear how much better it can get either. Thank you to Alex, Kofi, and Matt for being my guests on this episode, and to my producer, Michael Serber. Season 2 is just getting started, so leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice, and tell a friend about the show. We've got a bunch of Season 1 episodes for them to get caught up on, and next week we'll talk to some of the citizens of good old Rocky Top, pause for woo, Rocky Top, Tennessee.